Chapter 9. The next day, Jim Ferguson felt well enough and rested enough to dress and go down to the garage. He did not plan to do any heavy work. He intended to do only light stuff and to be there to answer the phone when his customers called. He wanted to explain to them what had happened, his accident, and what he intended to do. The mailman appeared at 9 o'clock, shortly after the old man had unlocked the big wooden doors. Among the usual ads and bills, he found an odd-looking letter. It was in a personal stationery envelope. It did not look like a business letter. The name and address, his, had been written by means of an old typewriter. The letters were out of alignment and partly red and dirt-filled. At his desk, he opened the envelope. The letter inside had been written on the same old machine. "Dear Mr. Ferguson, I understand you are thinking of going into a business situation with Mr. Christian Harmon, the man who owns that record business up on the corner of 25th Street. Seeing as I am in a position to know about matters of that sort, I advise you that you better be careful, as Mr. Harmon is not reputable. I would sign my name to this, only Mr. Harmon is smart enough that he would sue me. However, I do know about what I speak. Also, I am sorry that you have sold your garage." There was no signature on the letter. "Did Al write this?" the old man asked himself. He began to chuckle to himself as he reread the letter. It was the kind of gag that Al would think up. He would imagine Al tracking down an old typewriter, the older the better, the dirtier the keys the better, and then boning up in his mind as to how to phrase it, making it sound as unlike his usual style as possible, making it sound like some ignorant okey or possibly coon. Yes, he thought, like some colored person. On the other hand, he thought, maybe it wasn't from Al. Maybe all sorts of people knew about his going over to Marin County and having a look at Marin County Gardens. The word had gotten around to the other merchants along San Pablo Avenue. Thinking that, the old man felt angry. What business of theirs was it? Maybe they were jealous, he thought, resentful that he was about to break away from this run-down district. Maybe it was Betty at the health food store. The more he thought about it, the more it seemed to him that this was exactly the sort of letter that old Betty, with her worries and fads, would write. "I think I'll go over there," he decided, "and show it to her and get her to admit she wrote it." "Are they all talking about me?" he wondered, "getting together and discussing me? God damn them," he thought. He felt anger at all of them, the whole bunch. But suppose Betty hadn't written it? If he showed it to her then, he would appear foolish. Better not show it to anybody, even Al, just in case Al hadn't written it either. But then a new sensation came to him. It entered him so gradually that at first he did not notice it. It pleased Jim to think that they were talking about him. "Sure they are," he decided. "Words got around. Al spread the word. This letter proves it." Things always got around fast along the street, from one store to the next, rumor and gossip about everybody's business. Leaving the office, he walked out of the garage and down the sidewalk. A moment later, he was opening the door of the health food store, greeting Betty at the same time. "Hi, Jim," she said, rising and going to get the Silex coffee maker. "How are you today?"
"I'm okay," he said, seating himself at the counter.
There were a couple of other customers, middle-aged women whom he did not know. He glanced around, but there was no one whom he recognized, except, of course, Betty.
"Anything with your coffee?" Betty asked. "A roll?"
"Okay," he said, turning the stool so that he could watch the entrance of the garage. "Listen," he said. "You heard about me, did you, about what I did?"
At the shelf of rolls, Betty halted.
"You told me about selling your garage," she said.
The old man said, "Listen, I bought another garage."
The wrinkled, elderly face showed pleasure.
"I'm glad," she said. "Where is it?"
"In Marin County," he said. "A new one. I'm putting up a great deal of money. More than I got for the old garage. I got an inside tip. I can't tell you exactly where it is, naturally. You'll find out in due time. These things take time.
I'm really pleased, Betty said. I'm so glad.
Accepting his cup of coffee from her, the old man said,
I guess you know this guy Chris Harmon?
He always brings his cars to me. He drives a 58 Cadillac, very well-dressed man.
I may have seen him, Betty said.
The old man said, I'll tell you. I'm taking a real risk, a real risk. Here's the risk.
He felt more and more excitement. His words came out almost faster than he could speak them.
I have to keep my eye on this guy, Harmon. A lot of people wouldn't take the chance.
He winked at Betty, but she gazed back without comprehension.
He's got a reputation, he said.
What kind of reputation do you mean?
A lot of people think he's a big-time crook, the old man said.
Her face showed dismay. Jim, she said, be careful.
I'm being careful, he said, chuckling. Don't worry about me. He's really a well-known crook. He's skinned a lot of people. He may skin me. I wouldn't be surprised. It could happen.
He laughed out loud. Now her face showed both worry and agitation.
Maybe I'll wind up with no garage and no money, he said. Wouldn't that be a hell of a thing? Things like that do happen. You read about them in the paper every day.
Jim, you be careful, Betty said. You watch your step. You've spent years acquiring the money that you have.
Oh, he might get me, the old man said. He's smart.
He drank down more of the coffee, then set the cup back down.
I have to get back, he said. I just came over to break the news to you.
Getting carefully to his feet, avoiding any too sudden movement, he started to the door.
If you see me going by with a tin cup, he said, pausing at the door, you'll know why.
Make sure you think everything out,
Betty was saying to him as he shut the door of the health food store after him and started down the sidewalk, back to the garage.
They're all talking, he thought to himself. They know I'm possibly going to get swindled out of everything I have. That'll give them something to talk about for a long time. They know Harmon is a big-time swindler, a real professional. You can tell by the way they dress, by the expensive clothes, the tailoring, and the car. Look at the car he drives, a 58 Cadillac. There's nothing small-time there, he realized. And the house he owns, and his business connections and enterprises, he has his hand in just about every kind of thing. He's really a big man, an important businessman. They know he's made a lot of money. He's really rich. He might even have a couple of $100,000. Maybe he owns the whole of Marin Gardens outright. Maybe there isn't even somebody named Bradford. Or if there is, he's just a front. Somebody Harmon hired to represent him. Like he hired Carmichael. But there's one thing to be sure about, he said to himself as he re-entered his garage. There's nobody over Harmon. There's nobody he's taking orders from. He's the real boss of the whole thing. I've known him for years, and he's nobody's servant. He's in charge. I wonder who else I can tell, he thought. Maybe the barber across the street.
He could go over for a haircut later on. The exhilaration which had come over him after reading the anonymous letter continued to grow. It had gotten into every part of him. It made his hands and feet twitch with the need to do something, to be active. This is really something I'm involved in, he said to himself. For a moment, he stood in the doorway of his garage, listening to see if the phone were ringing. At the same time, he peered into the gloom to see if any customers had entered and were waiting around. He heard no one and saw no one, so after a moment, he went on down the sidewalk to Al's Motor Sales.
I'll drop in on old Al, he said to himself, and see what he has to say.
However, to his surprise, he found that Al's Motor Sales was closed up. The chain that linked the corner posts of the lot was still in place from the night, and the door of the little building had its lock on it. Also, he saw a few items of mail stuck from beneath the door.
Al had not shown up at all today. He had never arrived to open his lot, and here it was almost 10:30 now. Standing there, the old man felt disappointment.
God damn him, he said to himself. His previous anger returned. The hell with him, he thought as he turned and started back to his garage.
I don't know why I should be talking to him anyhow, he decided. What did he do but cast aspersion on everything I'm involved in? Some of Al's words of the night before returned to him, and he felt his ears and neck become hot.
Let him go his way, and I'll go mine, he told himself. He'll sink down, and I'll rise, because we're different. We're at opposite ends of the spectrum.
There's no way we can talk to each other, he thought as he entered the garage once more.
We've got nothing to say. Not if he's going to take the line he does, begrudging, as he always does, another person's success because he's so bitter about his own failure to amount to anything. It's the same old story. If you get anywhere in the world, all you incur is envy and malice. Everybody hates you because they wish they were you, and they know they never will be. That's why they all hate Chris Harmon, and that's why they hate me.
As he re-entered his office, he thought, Al's probably home, sleeping off a morning after. When he left my house, he probably went directly to a bar. It would be typical of him. And now he can't make it to open up his lot. He's probably still in bed. And his wife is out at her job, supporting the two of them. Supporting that bum. And he'll never change, the old man thought. He'll never grab opportunity and rise. He'll always be the same bum he is now, until the day he dies.
That morning, at 10 o'clock, Al Miller sat in his car parked at the corner of 25th Street and Pershing Avenue. Across from him, the three-story Teach Records Incorporated building dominated the neighborhood, making much more of a showing than the medical dental building next to it, or the accounting offices of a chain of supermarkets. For half an hour, he had been sitting in his car with the motor off, watching Teach Records, smoking, noticing the people going in and out and along the sidewalk, and the trucks pulling up and leaving.
Should I go in? He asked himself. If I do, he thought, it'll change my life. I have to be sure I want to. I have to decide now, because once I'm in there, it'll be too late. The thing only works one way. It only goes in, not out.
To assist, but not guide himself, he had brought along an anisin tin filled with pills.
Now was the time.
Opening the tin, he took out a flat green pill that looked like a candy heart. This one was a Dexamil, and he swallowed the whole pill, washing it down with Coke from a bottle he had brought along.
Taking the Dexy made him feel better almost at once.
It gave him a feeling of anticipation, because he knew from experience that before long a good mood would settle over him, and that out of this mood good things would come. But there was also the problem that when he had taken a Dexy, he tended to talk too fast and too much. So to balance the little flat green candy heart-shaped pill, he now swallowed down a round, red, shiny-coated pill. Aspirin, which looked like nothing so much as a ladybug with its feet drawn in. The aspirin was not a stimulant, but a tranquilizer. He hoped that together the two pills would bring about the state he wanted, the state appropriate for what he was about to do. For good measure, he also took two anisin tablets, and that was it. He closed the tin and put it away in his pocket. The next he knew, he was crossing the street. Then he stood in a fluorescent-lit office, facing a girl at a desk and switchboard. The girl, pretty, young, with earrings, looked up and said,
"Yes, sir?"
He said, "I want to see Mr. Teach."
"Mr. Teach isn't here," the girl said. "He's dead."
"Dead?" Al Miller said, amazed. "What happened? I didn't know him, but what the hell happened?"
"He was shot down in North Carolina," the girl said, "by someone. I think his name was Mayhard or Maynard.
She waited, but he could think of nothing to say. He stood mutely in front of her desk.
You could see Mr. Knight, she said. He's the manager. What was it about?
Okay, he said, but then he remembered that it was not Mr. Teach that he wanted to see at all. He had gotten the name from the sign over the building. It was Chris Harmon that he wanted to see. I want to see Mr. Harmon, he said.
Mr. Harmon is tied up right now, the girl said. If you will give me your name and sit down, I'll notify his secretary and find out for you if he has time to see you today.
He gave the girl his name and then went to sit down on one of the modern office chairs. In what seemed to him to be no time at all, the girl began to beckon to him. He put down his life and walked over.
Mr. Harmon has a few minutes to see you now, the girl said. He can squeeze you in if it doesn't take too long.
She pointed to a hallway.
The first office on the right.
It was like a plastic and glass doctor's office with side cubicles. He found the office, and there sat Chris Harmon.
Good day, Mr. Miller,
Mr. Harmon said pleasantly, indicating a chair. What can I do for you? Seating himself, Al said, I'm sorry to hear about Mr. Teach. As I told the girl, I didn't know him, but I know the Teach catalog, and
it happened a long time ago, Harmon said, smiling, in 1731.
Beg pardon? Al said.
Oh, I think I see.
He laughed. It was a gag or something. He could not follow it, so he let the subject go.
You're in charge? He said. You own this place?
Mr. Harmon, smiling slightly, nodded.
Listen, Al said. Do you remember me?
I think I do, Harmon said. I know I've seen you before.
He glanced down, and Al knew that Mr. Harmon was inspecting his clothing, his cloth jacket, slacks, shoes, sports shirt, sizing him up by what he wore.
I'm a used car salesman, Al said.
Mr. Harmon nodded. Ah, I see, he said.
You remember now? I think so. I'm a no-good crook, Al said. One of the worst used car salesmen there is.
Mr. Harmon ceased smiling, and his eyes became larger. His mouth fell open slightly.
Oh, indeed, he murmured.
I feel I came here to be frank,
Al said. Please be, Harmon said.
I do all the things I can to get a sale, Al said. It doesn't matter one bit to me what condition the car is in, just so long as I sell it. Let's face facts. The cars I have on my lot...
Yes, Harmon interrupted. You have a used car lot. Al's Motor Sales. I remember now.
They're turkeys, Al said. Dogs! They ought to be junked. Let me give you an example.
Do you have the time? Harmon nodded.
I got in an ex-taxi cab the other day. The way you can tell is a cab always has four doors, and usually it's either a Plymouth or a Studebaker. It's got no accessories except a heater and the cheapest car on the line. And they paint out the company name on the doors. And on the top, there's holes where they mounted the nameplate. So I knew this was a cab. It was a real wreck. It must have had 300,000 miles on it. I got it for $100. I repainted it, cleaned it up, got it looking good, and then I made up a story to go with it.
You set the speedometer back, Harmon said.
The odometer, Al said. Yes, back to 11,000 miles. It was last year's car.
Harmon lit a Benson & Hedges cigarette with a gold-inlaid cigarette lighter. He offered the box to Al, but he declined. He was too involved in what he was saying to want to smoke.
What I said, Al said, is that it was my wife's car.
Harmon's gray eyes sparkled.
I said she's been driving it to school, Al said. She has a phobia about buses. She can't stand to be shut in. I got it for her new from the Plymouth dealer up on Broadway. I got it wholesale because I know the guy, so I can pass on the savings. I got it for her, but we really didn't need two cars.
All she did was take it up to school once a day and maybe shopping. And I had to wash and polish it. It just took up space in the garage on weekends because when we went anywhere, we took our Chrysler.
I see, Harmon said.
So I finally told her we couldn't keep it, I'd sell it, and she could use the money for a vacation to Hawaii. So I wasn't interested in making a profit. I'd let it go for $1,300.
Did you sell it? Harmon said.
Not the first time, Al said. Some guy came in, and I told him that, but he noticed that the car had been repainted, and that bothered him. I told him she picked the original color, elephant gray with pink, and she got tired of that right away and got the Plymouth people to repaint it during the original guarantee. But he noticed that the shock absorbers were no good, so he knew the car had been used a lot. Anyhow, I finally unloaded it. He paused. To a Ubangi.
Pardon? Harmon said, cupping his ear.
To a Negro.
Ah, Harmon said. Ubangi.
He smiled. Naturally, he didn't have cash. He put $400 down. I financed it through my loan company across the street.
Harmon laughed.
All I do is walk across San Pablo, Al said, to the West Oakland Guarantee Savings. I got 12% compound interest on the unpaid balance, including loan charges and other fees, and if we have to repossess the car, the Ubangi is still liable for the entire unpaid balance. It's a 36-month contract. Actually, in all, the interest comes to a realistic 24% because it's what we call discounted.
I think I understand that type of interest, Harmon said. I believe I've run across it.
So, in all, I got almost $2,000 for the ex-taxi cab, Al said. Originally, it only cost about $1,600. New, all I had to do was paint it and clean it, and when I painted it, I didn't even have the rust sanded off or the dents banged out. I had the dents filled with compound and painted over.
Again, Mr. Harmon laughed. He seemed quite interested. He showed no sign of impatience or wanting Al to hurry up and get to his point or to leave. He seemed quite happy to go on listening.
I mean, Al said, I'll do anything to sell a car. I always re-groove tires.
What is that?
Taking smooth tires with no tread and cutting right into the fabric with a hot needle. Putting fake tread on and then painting the tire black so it looks new.
Isn't that dangerous?
Sure, Al said. If the guy so much as backs over a hot match, the tires will blow. But he thinks he's getting a set of good tires, so he goes ahead and buys the car when he otherwise might not. It's part of the business. Everybody, or nearly everybody, does it. You have to move your stock. The main thing is to have a story that'll explain everything. If you can't get a car started, you always say it's out of gas. If a window won't roll up or down, you say the car came in just this morning and your boy hasn't had a chance to go over it yet. You have to be able to come back. If the customer notices that the floor mat is worn from wear, you say the car was driven by a woman who wore high-heeled shoes. If the seat covers are torn up from wear, maybe from kids, you say the owner had a pet dog he took with him, and in a week the dog's nails did it. You always give a story.
I see, Harmon said, paying attention.
If the engine makes a lot of noise because of bad bearings, you say it's just tappet adjustment.
Harmon nodded.
If the car won't go into gear, you say it's because you just had a new clutch put in and it isn't adjusted yet.
Harmon, considering, said, suppose the brakes don't work. Suppose you allow a customer to drive one of your cars, and when he tries to stop it, the car simply won't stop. What can you say?
"What, you say some delinquent kid siphoned out the fluid?" Al said. "During the night. And you sound off about kids stealing cigar lighters and light bulbs and spare tires. You really sound angry."
Harmon nodded. "I see."
"I've done a good business," Al said. "I enjoy it, matching my wits against theirs. It's exciting. It's stimulating. I wouldn't go into any other business. It's my life blood. I was born to it. I know all the tricks."
"Apparently you do," Harmon said.
"But I have to get out of it."
"Why?" Al said.
"It's not big enough to hold me."
"Ah," Harmon said.
"Listen,
Al said. I'm Livewire. I have go. I can't be held back by something small time. For me, selling used cars has been a training ground. It's taught me about the world. Now I'm ready for something really worthwhile, something that really tries my mettle. It used to be a challenge, but now it isn't, because he made his voice low and sharp. I know I can win. Every time. They're no match for me. I take 'em one and all, once they step onto my lot. He made a swiping motion. I have them. No contest. Harmon was silent. This is an expanding economy, Al said. A growing country with destiny. A man either gets bigger or smaller. He either goes up with the economy or he goes down. He becomes nothing. I refuse to become nothing. I intend to tie myself in with the American system that has room for a man with drive and sincerity. Harmon regarded him. That's why I can do it, Al said. That's why I can take them every time. Because I believe in what I'm doing. Harmon nodded slowly. It's no job, Al said. No mere making a buck. Money means nothing to me in itself. It's what money represents. Money is proof. Proof that a man has ambition and determination, and that he isn't afraid of opportunity when it knocks in his face. Money shows that he isn't afraid to be himself. And he knows mothers like himself. He recognizes them because they have the same drive, the same unwillingness to be turned down or set back by defeat. Harmon said, What made you come by here to teach? I met you, Al said. That's the answer. He made a gesture, showing that he would add nothing more. There was silence. Well, Harmon said, what do you want here? So far, all you've done is detail your history. I want to work for Christian Harmon. It's as simple as that. Harmon raised his eyebrows. Well, there's nothing open that I know of. Al said nothing. What did you have in mind? You have no experience in the record business. Shall I be frank? Al said. Please. Harmon smiled once more. I don't know records, Al said. Let's be realistic. But a salesman doesn't sell his product. He sells himself. And that's what I know, Mr. Harmon. I know myself. And with that, I can sell anything. Harmon considered. You would take any job with us? By what you say, I gather you're willing to interrupting, Al said. Let me clarify. I intend to work for someone who can make use of me. I don't intend to rot. I need to be used and used properly. A man doesn't grind valves with a hoe. A man doesn't use a beautiful pistol made by hand by the finest European craftsman to shoot tin cans. He paused. But it's you, Mr. Harmon, who knows who goes where. It's you who knows the organization and what it needs, and as far as I'm concerned, it's the organization that comes first. Do I make myself clear? I think so, Mr. Harmon said. In other words, you'll be willing to leave it up to me. Precisely, Al said. Well, Harmon said, scratching his nose, I'll suggest this. You can give the girl your name and where we can reach you. I'll talk it over with Mr. Knight and Mr. Gam, and we'll see. Generally, I let Gam do the hiring. At once, Al rose to his feet. Thanks, Mr. Harmon, he said. I'll do that, and I won't take any more of your time. Holding his hand out to Harmon, he waited. Mr. Harmon reached up and took his hand. They shook, and then Al strode from his office. Outside, he halted at the secretary's desk. Mr. Harmon instructed me to give you certain information, he said briskly. The girl gave him a pad of paper and a pencil. However, he whipped out a ballpoint pen and wrote his name and his address, and their apartment phone, which was listed under his wife's maiden name. Then he smiled at the secretary and left the building. As he came out on the street, the bright sunlight smote him. and at once his head began to ache. The anisin, he realized, was beginning to wear off, and so too were the sparine and the dexamil. Now he felt tired and let down. He walked slowly to his car, tugged the door open, and got in behind the wheel. I wonder if I'll hear from him, he thought. Anyhow, I made my pitch. I did everything I could. After a time, he started up the car and drove away in the direction of Al's motor sales. On Friday, when he had fairly well given up hoping, a car pulled over to the curb at Al's motor sales, and a young man in tie and shirt sleeves got out.
Mr. Miller?
He said. Coming out of his little building, Al said,
Speaking.
I'm from Teach Records, the young man said. Mr. Gam has been trying to get hold of you. He'd like you to call him as soon as you can.
All right, Al said. Thanks.
The young man got back in his car and drove off. This is it, Al said. He walked across the street to the coffee shop and entered the payphone booth. A moment later, he was connected with the switchboard girl at Teach Records.
This is Mr. Miller, he said. Mr. Gam asked me to call.
Oh, yes, Mr. Miller, the girl said. We just sent a man down to your place of business. Did he succeed in finding you?
Yes, Al said.
Just a moment, and I'll connect you with Mr. Gam.
Presently, a deep, middle-aged man's voice came on the phone. Mr. Miller, the man said, I'm Fred Gam. You were in discussing a spot with us, with Mr. Harmon. If you're still interested, we've batted the idea around among us and come up with something. It would probably be worth your while to drop by sometime early next week.
I could make it today, Al said. I'll cancel all down the line.
Fine, Mr. Gam said. I'll look forward to seeing you, say, around 4.
At 4, Al closed up his lot and drove over to Teach Records. He found Mr. Gam to be a good-natured, heavy-set man with gray hair, using an office that seemed the same size as Mr. Harmon's.
Glad to meet you, Gam said, shaking hands with him. On his desk, he had a number of papers, through which he now glanced.
Well, Mr. Miller, he said, you want to join the organization, it seems.
Right,
Al said. Come along, then.
Gam rose, beckoning, and Al followed him down a corridor, past one door after another. They came out in a huge area in which men were working. The air was heavy with smells of machinery. Noise beat at Al's ears, a constant mechanical din.
This is the operation, Mr. Gam said, where we do the actual pressing.
It looked to Al like a tire retreading outfit. He saw the same round machines, a man at each, the tops opening and shutting.
You won't be involved with this end, Mr. Gam said.
He led Al from the area and down another hallway.
Al said, I consider Chris Harmon the most inspiring human being I've ever had the privilege to meet, and in my business I see a good slice of mankind.
Yes. Chris said he ran into you at your car lot. You were obviously quite open with Chris, so we'll be equally open with you. You came to us at exactly the right moment. You couldn't have picked it better if you'd had somebody planted in the organization.
He halted and eyed Al.
This job didn't exist 3 days ago, and it has to be filled right now. It's a good job, Miller. It's ring-ding.
Fine, Al said.
Want to know what it was, Miller?
Yes,
Al said.
Your sincerity, Gam said. Don't ever lose that. It's so goddamn rare in this society of ours.
I could never lose it, Al said, because I got it in a moment of supreme courage and danger. I got it in Korea, when the commies had me pinned down. I got it when I faced death at the hands of a bayonet and the frenzied slant eyes of a gook. I learned to know myself, Mr. Gam. I took a good look at myself, all I am, all my maker meant me to be,
and that's not something a man loses.
After a moment, Gam said, I wish it could be shared. I wish it could be passed on to every man. I'll never have what you have.
Afraid not, Al said.
You told Chris it wasn't money. That reached him. For Chris, it isn't money either. It never was and it never will be. Why did he go into the record business? Because he wanted to ameliorate the condition of the average man through the one thing that can ameliorate. Not bigger cars or bigger TV sets, but through art. Through music.
Mr. Gam pushed open a heavy door that led to a parking lot. He and Al slowly crossed the lot.
Naturally, there have to be compromises. A business has to pay. We know that. It's the harsh reality. That's why there's been Glee Records and, well, let's face it, the Teach catalog itself. You know the catalog, of course. It's mostly trash. It's supposed to be because it serves the commercial market. Rock and roll, Negro jazz combinations, what they call race.
Mm-hmm.
Country. That is Oki steel guitar. And pops. We've had a few hits. Teach has made the top 10 and made it often. Frank Fitch has been on Teach for years.
I'm familiar, Al said. Frank Fitch's Piano Meanderings has been one of our best sellers.
And Georgia O'Hare and her Merry Men of Song. Our best-selling item in the catalog right now is, Pride. You've heard it in 1,000 lunch counters all over America.
They had entered another building now.
Your concern, Mr. Gam said, will be the new label, the one that Chris Harmon has always wanted to bring out but never could before. It's called Antigua. The long-playing record has made it possible. You'll be in charge of promotion. You'll receive a salary of $750 a month, plus traveling expenses. The usual expense account system, which will work out gradually as we get to know you better. And your base salary will go up in due time.
I see, Al said.
We've bought this building here, Mr. Gam said as they walked down a newly painted hall. We're making it over. It's not quite finished. Your office will be here.
He took out a key and unlocked a door.
Al found himself looking into an office which smelled of paint.
What will be on the Antigua label?
He asked. Mr. Harmon's great project, Mr. Gam said. The medieval and early Renaissance masses and choral works. Palestrina de Pre, Orlando Lassus. Polyphonic and monody. Gregorian, if possible, if there's a market.
It was a long way from a used car lot, Al thought to himself as he gazed at the barren, newly painted and decorated office. Is this what I got for my pitch to Chris Harmon?
Is this what he saw in me and in what I said? Is this the man that is trying to swindle Jim Ferguson, the man who peddles the dirty version of Little Eva on the Ice?
He felt ill and discouraged. The whole thing made no sense to him. And unfortunately, he had no pills with him, no Dexamil or Spirene to help him out. All he could do was go on listening to Mr. Gam. He had gotten too far in, too deep into Teach Records and Chris Harmon's organization, to back out.